Picture this. It's a beautiful afternoon, maybe 62 degrees, a little humid, but nothing that would make you think twice. You're flying a Cessna 172 that has logged 2,000 hours without incident. Everything is running perfectly. You're on downwind in a traffic pattern you've flown 100 times. Life is genuinely good. Your RPM, which should be sitting right around 1500, is reading 1400, and you didn't touch the throttle. You're busy looking for traffic, so you don't pay it much attention. Now, it's at 1300. You're on final. You advance the throttle to correct your descent rate, and the engine hesitates. The RPM climbs, stumbles, then settles 200 below where it should be. You're now managing a partial power loss at 300 feet above the ground on short final. That's carburetor ice. And everything I just described has killed pilots who were having what looked like a perfectly good flight. I'm Pattern. This is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today we are digging into carb ice, what it actually is when it actually forms, how to recognize it before it surprises you, how to fix it correctly, and what the airman certification standards expect you to demonstrate before your evaluator signs off your check ride. Before we get into the physics, quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for pilots at every step of the journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument, commercial, CFI. There's a coin for each one of those milestones, and these are well made. When someone hands you a coin that says first solo on it, you remember exactly what it cost you to earn it. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. All right, let's talk about why air gets cold in a carburetor. In a carbureted engine, fuel and air mix before going into the engine. Inside the carburetor, there's a venturi, a narrowing in the throat of the carburetor that accelerates airflow. Basic fluid dynamics, when you accelerate a gas through a constriction, you drop its pressure, drop the pressure, and the temperature drops. We're talking a temperature drop of 20 to 30 degrees Fahrenheit just from the airflow through the venturi. Then you add fuel evaporating into that airstream. Evaporation pulls heat out of the surrounding air, the same reason you sweat to cool down. Add another 10 to 15 degrees of cooling combined, you can see temperature drops of up to 40 degrees Fahrenheit inside the carburetor compared to outside air. 40 degrees, right in the throat of the system that feeds your engine. Here is the critical piece. The number I want burned into your memory, outside air temperature does not have to be anywhere near freezing for carburetor icing to happen. The Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, the Federal Aviation Administration's textbook, the one you studied for your written exam, has a carburetor icing probability chart in it. Pull it up after you're done listening. What that chart shows is that the highest probability of serious icing, the zone labeled serious icing at any power, spans from roughly 32 degrees to about 70 degrees Fahrenheit, as long as relative humidity is high. The peak of the worst zone is around 50 to 60 degrees, not below freezing. Not even cold. 50 to 60 degrees Fahrenheit. That is a beautiful summer morning in the Midwest. That is the kind of day you look at the weather, say VFR, good visibility, no icing concerns, and go fly with your student. I have had students sit down at a briefing on a perfect-looking 70-degree morning, and I ask them, what are the conditions for carb ice today? And they look at me like I asked them to explain something that has nothing to do with the flight, because in their mind, icing is a winter problem, a cold weather problem. Something that happens to airliners and clouds. This is not an obscure fact, it is in the textbook. But somewhere between ground school and flight training, the message does not stick the way it should. Carb ice still kills pilots every single year in preventable accidents. Let me break down the three types of carburetor icing because understanding where it forms changes how you think about prevention. The first is fuel evaporation ice. This forms anywhere in the induction system where fuel is evaporating. The evaporation pulls heat out and can drop local temperatures below freezing if humidity is high enough. This type can happen regardless of outside air temperature, which is the alarming part. The second is throttle ice. This forms on and just behind the throttle plate, especially at low power settings. When you reduce power, you're restricting the airflow more aggressively at the throttle plate, which creates a greater pressure drop and therefore a greater temperature drop right at that point. This is why carb ice is more common at low power than at cruise. This is why the traffic pattern is high-risk territory. You've got the throttle pulled back and the humidity's just sitting there. The third is impact ice. This forms when you're flying through visible moisture, rain, drizzle, low clouds, and supercooled water droplets hit cold metallic surfaces in the induction system. Impact ice requires visible moisture, so it's more of a weather hazard you'd brief for than the sneaky clear day problem we're really focused on today. For most of us flying training aircraft in normal VFR conditions, we're dealing with fuel evaporation ice and throttle ice. They're the quiet killers because they don't require any weather you'd consider unusual. So, how do you detect it? In a fixed-pitch propeller airplane, and most training aircraft are fixed-pitch, the indicator is RPM. An unexplained RPM drop, you have not touched the throttle. The power setting hasn't changed, and yet the RPM is coming down. Maybe 50 RPM at first, maybe 100. The engine might start running rough. The sound changes. The problem is that in the pattern, with everything else you're managing, a gradual RPM decay doesn't always announce itself. You're not staring at the tachometer every 5 seconds, which is exactly why this hazard is so insidious. In a constant-speed propeller airplane, the signature is different. The prop governor is actively working to maintain the RPM you've set. So, the first indication isn't an RPM drop, it's a manifold pressure drop. The engine is losing power, but the governor is compensating, and you see it in the manifold gauge before you hear it in the engine. Watch for unexplained manifold pressure decreases when nothing else in the cockpit has changed. Either way, the fix is the same. Carburetor heat. The carb heat system takes hot air from around the exhaust manifold, air that has been heated by the engine itself, and routes it into the carburetor, bypassing the normal cold-filtered air inlet. That warm air raises the temperature inside the carburetor, melts any ice that has formed, and restores normal airflow to the engine. Here's the procedure, and I want to be precise because the airman certification standards are precise. When you suspect carb ice, or when conditions suggest icing is likely, apply full carburetor heat, not partial. Full pull that carb heat knob or flip that lever all the way to the hot position. And now comes the part that tests whether a student has actually been taught this correctly, or just told the answer. Things will get worse before they get better. The RPM will drop further, sometimes significantly. The engine will run rougher. It may stumble. This is not a sign that you've made things worse. This is exactly what is supposed to happen. Two things are causing that roughness. First, you've switched from dense, filtered cold air to less dense warm air. Warm air is less dense than cold air. Less dense air means a slightly richer, less powerful mixture. That alone will drop the RPM. Second, if there is ice in the system, it is now melting. Liquid water is briefly running through the induction system and into the engine. Water in a combustion engine causes the same rough running you'd feel with a little contamination in the fuel. It clears quickly, but in the moment it's happening, the engine is going to sound like it does not appreciate what you're doing. Do not pull the carb heat back off. That is the mistake. I can describe the exact scenario to you. Things get worse. The student gets nervous. The carb heat goes back in, and then the cold air comes back in, and the remaining moisture in the carburetor freezes again immediately, and you're right back where you started, except now you've used up 30 seconds of altitude. Stay with the full carb heat. Give it 20 to 30 seconds. If carb ice is the culprit, the RPM will start to climb, the roughness will smooth out, and your final RPM with carb heat applied will typically settle a little higher than where you were before the ice formed, because the restriction is gone. If the RPM doesn't come back, if the engine doesn't smooth out, then you're dealing with something else. Carb heat won't fix a fuel issue or a magneto problem. But applying it was still the correct first step, and now you continue troubleshooting methodically. Let's talk prevention, because reactive is never as good as proactive with this particular hazard. Your pilot's operating handbook, your POH, is the definitive guide for your specific aircraft. That section on carburetor heat tells you exactly when the manufacturer wants you using it. Follow it. But there are general principles that apply across most carbureted training aircraft. Apply carb heat before any significant power reduction, before you pull the throttle back for descent, before you configure for landing. Before you enter the pattern, run the heat for a few seconds. Let it do its job, then pull the power back. You're entering a prolonged low power phase where icing conditions persist. Warm the system first, in cruise, particularly in high humidity. Many instructors and manufacturers recommend periodic application of carb heat, 10 to 15 seconds every 20 to 30 minutes, just to clear any ice before it builds into a restriction. Think of it as a quick maintenance check on your induction system every half hour, and during run-up, every run-up, you apply carb heat and watch the tachometer. What you expect to see is an RPM drop when you apply heat, then a recovery when you pull it off. That initial drop on a warm engine is normal. You're swapping dense cold air for warm, unfiltered air. 50 to 100 RPM drop is typical. Here's the interesting part. If your RPM goes up when you apply carb heat during run-up, ice was already forming, even sitting on the ground. The warm air melted a restriction that was already developing. That tells you conditions today are ripe for carburetor icing, and you should fly your checklist accordingly for the entire flight. Let me walk through a longer scenario, because this is how the knowledge becomes real. You're doing a cross-country on a September morning. Temperature is 58 degrees, dew point is 51. Relative humidity close to 80%. You brief the weather, VFR, no clouds below 10,000 light winds, nothing that screams danger. You file, you pre-flight, you depart. You're at 4,500 feet in cruise. Throttle set, mixture leaned for altitude, everything looks right. 45 minutes into the flight, your RPM drops from 2,400 to 2,300. You notice it. You think about the mixture, but you leaned it correctly. Nothing else has changed. This is where training matters. A trained pilot recognizes that unexplained RPM drop, considers the conditions. Temperature 58 degrees, humidity high. That's the prime icing zone on the chart. Apply carb heat. The RPM drops to 2,100. Engine roughens. You stay with it. 20 seconds later, the engine smooths out. The RPM climbs to 2,430. The ice is gone, and the engine is breathing a little better than before. You make a note. Icing conditions today? Carb heat before every descent. Run it periodically in cruise. You carry that awareness the entire flight. That pilot lands the airplane. The pilot who dismisses that 100 RPM drop or who applies carb heat and pulls it off the moment things get rough may not. Now, the airman certification standards, because this is a training show and we talk about check ride expectations under the area of operations covering emergency and abnormal procedures, and also under normal operations, the evaluator is going to test your understanding of carb ice and your ability to execute the correct response. The examiner is looking for several specific things. First, can you explain the conditions that favor carburetor icing? Don't just say cold weather. Show that you understand the temperature and humidity relationship. Show that you know a comfortable summer day can be more dangerous than a crisp winter morning. Explain the chart in your own words. Second, can you describe the symptoms clearly? What does it look like in a fixed pitch airplane versus a constant speed airplane? Name the instruments, describe the change. Third, can you execute the procedure correctly and narrate what's happening? Apply full carb heat, not partial. Explain the expected roughness and why it happens. Demonstrate that you know to stay with the heat, not pull it off when things get worse. Observe for recovery. Fourth, and this is what separates the student who really understands this from the student who memorized the right words. Can you explain the prevention strategy? When do you apply carb heat proactively? How does your POH guide the specific aircraft you're flying? How do you adjust your strategy based on today's conditions? That last part. The conditions of the day awareness is what gets you a strong evaluation. It shows you're thinking like a pilot, not reciting a checklist. Here's something I want to say to every student who's listening. Your engine instruments deserve the same attention as your traffic scan. In the pattern, you're working hard. Traffic scan, radio calls, aircraft configuration, stabilized approach. All of that is real, and all of it matters. But the tachometer is telling you a story too. If you're not reading it, you miss the one piece of information that changes the outcome of the flight. Build a scan that includes the engine instruments. When you check the altimeter on downwind, also check the tachometer. When you look at the airspeed indicator, glance at the RPM, make it automatic. The pilot who catches the 100 RPM drop on downwind has time, altitude, and options. The pilot who catches it on short final has very little of any of those. One more thing before we close. Fuel injection. If you're flying a fuel-injected engine, a Lycoming IO 360 or Continental IO 520 or similar, you do not have a carburetor, so you do not have carburetor icing. That's one of the genuine advantages of fuel injection over carbureted systems. But injected engines have an alternate air door that addresses their own form of induction icing, and the procedure for that is specific to your aircraft and POH. Same principle, know your airplane, know its systems, fly the procedures for what you're actually flying. But if you're in a carbureted airplane, and a lot of us are and will be for a long time, this is not a theoretical exercise. It is a live hazard on perfectly nice days in perfectly well-maintained airplanes with nothing unusual about the weather. And it is manageable every single time if you catch it early and fly the procedure correctly. The Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge has that carb icing probability chart, and I'm serious when I say go find it and look at it until you know the zones without looking. The FAA safety team also has published material on this. Pull both. Everything we talked about today is their find. The full show archive at radiohanger.com. I'm Pattern. Stay ahead of the airplane out there.